Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, everybody, let's hang tight and look for landing radar.
What guns?
No guidance.
We'll need that landing radar by 18,000 with this down track.
Roger.
On the pings.
Roger, I copy guidance. Okay, we got data back.
Radar flight looks good.
Roger.
2,000 feet.
Roger. 2,000 foot delta H. I'm going around the horn. Make your go-no-goes based on the data you had for our LOS. I see we got it back. Give me another few seconds.
We're yelling fine.
Okay, retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guide.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telcom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Surgeon.
Go.
Capcom. We're go to continue. PDI.
Coming to you live from the slopes of the ghost-filled Sierra Nevada gold country and in the paranormally active shadow of Mount Rainier, it's Ghost Rider Paranormal Radio with your hosts, John Almada and Kat Lang.
I'm one of the locusts which hates all polluters, what hates honey up and square up. Why, fifth and a bottom and always a rustle, but none of them get nowhere. If anyone dashes to rip me this, it's Bob and it's Slam understand. So we could behave, but I'd go one lightsaber with Popeye the Sailor. Why, Popeye the Sailor Man? Popeye the Sailor Man. I'm strong to the finish, cause I eat the spinach. I'm Popeye the Sailor Man.
Cat, it's that time once again, and
it is that time.
Yep, we've got tonight. We're going to do haunted ships of the United States Navy, and a big salute to all the men and women of service, no matter what uniform you're in.
Yay!
I'm saluting you all now. Thank you for defending our country, the greatest country on earth. That said, we've got the Navy in the spotlight today, and we're going to be talking about the USS Tarawa. I have a real trouble saying that. I want to say Tarawa.
I don't know why. Yeah. It's like saying Baba Wawa.
Baba Wawa. And also...
Baba Wawa.
Yep, Baba Wawa Tarawa. And also the USS Hornet, and also the USS Lexington, two very classically well-known haunted ships. Might talk a little bit about the service of the Queen Mary, that kind of thing, but that said, we're going to just go ahead and go on with the news and talk about some of the paranormal things that are going on out there. So we'll start with... Oh, yeah, I forgot. I got to play that thing. You know what? Just go ahead and... Yeah, you do that. Do your thing. Okay. Yep, we got it. All right, so we're going to be looking at... The news comes from the cnewspubs.com veterans website. The real Ghostbusters come to American Victory May 2nd. And Tampa's Florida Paranormal Extreme will take over the American Victory ship on Saturday, May 2nd from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. This is not open to the public, but you can watch the ghostly investigation unfold as it live, as it happens at www.floridaparanormalresearch.com. So make sure you just make a note of that. And we do have the link on our website at the GRI main site, so you can just get to this story.
What time does it start?
It shows from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., so they're going to do a pretty good long investigation. And right about that time, by the way, this is something that just came in that I'm telling you about. We're going to be doing a special show live from a haunted bookstore in Placerville. And I went down today and actually did some of the scouting this morning and talked with the owners. And so we should – it'll be either the 1st or the 15th, and depending on our team and who we can get together and get out there and do that. So, you know, stay tuned. We'll see how that goes. Anyway, I already reserved the show space, and we should be all set to do something pretty interesting out there. So we're going to do about an hour and a half show from there, and then we'll go on to stay the entire evening in the store and see what we pick up, because pretty much the whole block is friggin' haunted. So let's go on to the next item.
It's news.
Very good, Kat.
News from GRI Paranormal. Take it away, John.
Okay. Sci-Fi's Hunters investigate ghostly Titanic exhibit.
Ooh.
And I know these are your favorite people,
right?
The folks from Ghost Hunters. But anyway, they did appear at the Georgia Aquarium in Atlanta, the world's biggest fish tank. And what happened was that they decided to host the Titanic exhibit. And so I'll read some of the story here. And some who explore the aquarium's special Titanic exhibit might even get glimpses of ghosts. In fact, so many volunteers stationed in the shipwreck exhibit reported ghostly encounters last fall that aquarium officials called in professional Ghostbusters to investigate. One of the volunteers in the iceberg room got tired and went to sit down and said that she had she felt a finger go through her hair, says Megan Gibbons, spokesperson for the aquarium. She brushed her head and nothing, and then suddenly felt a hand come down on her head. And so we did see the show pretty much last Wednesday that our good friends at TAPS did go out there and investigate it. I haven't seen I actually saw about half of it, so I have to go back and
I saw the whole thing.
What did you think about it?
You know, it's interesting. I would tend to believe anyway, that some of that stuff from the Titanic is probably probably has something attached to it. The EVP that they picked up from there, that no weight, I think is what it says. No, it says like no weight.
Yeah.
It's a Class A EVP. Whether it's real or not, I don't know. I think it was an interesting. I think it was an interesting investigation. I'd sure like to investigate around that stuff. But the claim that the workers see the guy standing in the corner is different. I can believe it though.
Yeah, I believe it too. I've heard in the past that they were having some trouble with that exhibit, and it seemed to go wherever they went. So I'm hoping that if it hits the West Coast, that we may get a chance to actually go out there. And definitely give you a call and bring you out, because you're the psychic. So you can come in and take a look at it, too, and see what we get.
Well, the Titanic exhibit, they had some of the stuff from the Titanic up here in Seattle probably, oh, man, that's got to be about 10 years ago. And people were, it was in the paper, people were saying that they got a strange feeling. Now, I don't know if that strange feeling means you would get a strange feeling because, you know, the stuff's from the Titanic and the whole story and the suffering. And so I guess, yeah, I'd like to see the exhibit myself, and I do hope it comes. Well, it'll come to the West Coast somewhere, I would think.
Yeah, well, I'm looking right here at the page that right next to it is the actual how long it's going to run. It has... I'll just read it off here. Titan Aquatic Exhibit. There are nearly 200 artifacts salvaged from the 1912 shipwreck, and the show runs through September 7th. And let's see, it's hours there at the Georgia Aquarium, and that's if you want to see the site, www.georgiaaquarium.org/visit-us/Titanic. TitanicHaunting.aspx. Just hit www.georgiaaquarium.org, and I'm sure they'll have links to take you right on in there. And it's open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Sunday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Saturday. So it does look like it's quite a thing to see, and I hope that one day we can actually see this ourselves and go from there. But That said, let's move on to the next item. We have, actually, let me go back here. Oh, this was a kind of a funny one. I just happened to run into this, and I looked and went, my God, what a hideous story. The Lake Area Storm Hag, demonic siren of the Great Lakes. And it says, since first explored in the 1600s, the Great Lakes have earned a reputation for being a treacherous and unforgiving waterway. Extremely violent storms seem to appear out of nowhere, taking both vessel and crew into a watery grave. In 1977, author Jay Gourley's The Great Lakes Triangle proposed that there were sinister forces behind all of these mysterious disappearances. But many sailors on Lake Erie, at least, have had a theory for centuries on the unexplainable storms and the shipwrecks that plagued the freshwater lake. According to legend, the storm hag lives at the bottom of the lake close to Crescue Island Peninsula. And if I said it wrong, I'm sorry. She is a hideous she-demon. Her yellow eyes shine in the dark like those of a cat. Her skin is a pale shade green. Her teeth are sharp and pointed like a shark, able to tear off the skin of her victims. They are also green, which gives another less common name, Jenny Green Teeth. Her hands have long pointed nails like talons that have poison with which she can paralyze a poor soul with just one little prick of her fingers. Her arms are long and strong, and they wrap around her victims, making it impossible for them to escape her flesh-hungry attack. The old legend tells that like a siren before she attacks, she sings a quiet song over the waves that few have survived to tell. Traditionally, the song that she sings is, "Come into the water, love. Dance beneath the waves, where dwell the bones of sailor lads inside my saffron caves."
That's the Doc John says. Yeah, that's the. There's a song called the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Yeah, yeah. So I was looking at the any news stories that might kind of fit our show theme tonight, and found that, and I was just amazed at it. So,
those are those.
Yeah, definitely...
Those are the nor'easters that come up and blow across. And they're deadly. They're definitely deadly.
It's the way just the geology and the kind of weather that comes in and with all the water and everything, there's a lot of energy that just builds up there. And I guess the October and November storms are just vicious out there.
Oh, they're brutal.
So I don't think I'd ever want to be out there at that time.
No.
Either. Yeah. So anyway, also got some big news for the show. Two different events going on. Number one, you heard about the live show that we're going to be doing. And the reason we can do that is we just ordered a special, basically a mobile studio. So we can go out in the field now and do live shows and do some pretty amazing things. So we're going to be testing that stuff out on test shows. Matter of fact, you and I, Kat, I'll give you a call when you've got some free time and we can actually test some of it on test shows. But we're going to definitely be making more use of that in the coming year. The other thing is that the United States Postal Service so graciously showed up and dropped in my hands the Ovilus. I have an Ovilus, and as I promised in earlier shows, we're going to actually be using that on the show for like some kind of a regular segment where we'll open – basically we'll open – it's like an open mic to spirits. And we're going to give that a try and see how it goes. And I've already been playing around with it, and it's just amazing. And so we're going to give that a try and get familiar with it. I think it may be a couple of weeks before we actually give that a go. And let's see what else is going on. Also, the guy who makes the Ovilus, his name is Bill, and I don't have the last name in front of me right now, but Bill has accepted an invitation to be interviewed on the show about his devices.
Yep.
So we're going to be setting up a time with him and bringing him aboard to talk with us about the Ovilus and the paranormal puck and all the other neat devices he has and find out more about that. And not only that, where he's going. What's he going to be doing with this kind of thing? So we look forward to having him aboard. So that's basically what's going on out here. Let's see what else we have going on. Just going through the notes real quick. What's going on in your world, by the way, Miss Kat, while I'm looking over some notes?
Well, I feel better. I left my cold behind. And I still have not heard from those people for the investigation, but I do continue to help people with my remote viewing skills.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think that's something good to bring up right now is I think one of the aspects of the show we should start looking into is something along those lines where maybe we get call-in guests that actually want that as as something that you could do to be able to do remote viewing and then do it on air. So, I mean, I don't know what you think. I'm kind of putting you on the spot here. But I do think a regular feature of that, you know, where we dedicate some time to that and open the call and the chat lines for that, I think it would be kind of fun.
It's a fun and interesting, and it's actually I think it's more fascinating for people that I do this for than it is for me to actually do it because it's so easy.
Well, yeah, but you've got that you've got the ability, and a lot of people don't have that. It's
I know.
It's not a common thing. So for you, what you think is easy, a lot of people, you know, will pay good money to have somebody use that. As a matter of fact, I mean, the CIA had that program going on way back in the 70s. That, you know, they were making use of that for various reasons, and I'm sure they're still doing it. But in your case, you've got a pretty good gift, and I think, you know, it would be neat to basically take it forward.
Well, I'd like to. I just not sure there's a big market for what I do.
Well, I'm just going to put you on the interview stand for a little while on that. So how does that work for you? How do you see these things? I mean, you come up with some pretty accurate stuff. I just wonder how you do it.
I just do it. I of course there's an explanation for it, but I'm not into talking about that aspect of it.
Yeah, I know that part. I'm just saying, I mean, from when you do get the item, does it just come to mind? Is basically what you're, if the simple explanation, it just comes to mind when you think about it or see the picture? Or do you see it in your mind's eye?
Yeah. Yep. Sure do.
Huh.
All the time. It's constant. It gives me a headache. But I do it because if I shut it, I can't shut it off. So I myself have done some very, people tell me it's amazing. But it's a gift that I have had since birth. And I don't understand what's so amazing about it, but it is, at times it gets rather fascinating, and I'm just glad that I can, I help the people that I do, and the people that I do help, they appreciate it, and they're always quick with a thank you, and that's really all I need.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about it some more afterwards. I just wanted to just kind of highlight that, you know, I think it's really kind of neat what you do.
Thanks.
And the things that you've done in front of me, I just kind of picked up my jaw off the floor a few times, and you're still, poor thing, you're still getting over it, or are you still got a little bit of that cold?
I take an expectorant now, and I'm just getting it all up, so it comes and goes. I drink a lot of water, and I just, at the end of the night, I take my meds, and I have a saying for my gift, I do what I do when I do what I do, and I do what I do what I do. That's it.
Say that fast.
Can I explain it? Sure, I can explain it, but I see people in the paranormal world, and I see some of the, I don't know, to a better way to explain it. I see people in the upper crust of the paranormal world, and I see what some of them go through. And I see what some people are subjected to, and I can assure you, I will. I don't want to be subjected to that type of scrutiny and speculation because I know what I know, and I do what I do. And the further away from the spotlight I can get, probably the better off I'd probably be, just
okay.
Because of observing what I know. I know people out there that say they can do what I do. I've never met anybody that can do what I do, how I do it. I've never met anybody that's as accurate as I am. I've never met anybody that even comes close to how accurate I am. I've scared people. I've brought people to their knees. I've made people cry. I've never charged a dime, nor will I ever charge a dime. I'd like to do a show. I know a lot of the upper crust people don't use people like me. They don't think they have any use for people like me, and it's probably because there isn't anybody like me that can accurately tell them what's going on with whatever it is that they're doing. So that's where I stand on that.
Well, I can tell you one thing. Before we do some of our upcoming investigations, I'm going to be asking you to remote view a few things for me, because I will make use of that if you don't mind. Especially when
I've been working with
story.
You for a long time on it. You know what I can do. So.
Oh yeah, and you've been right on the money with a lot of it. So
yeah.
You know, I'm just looking forward to the next steps here. We're going to be doing these. Again, like I said, we're going to be going out on the road quite a bit more now that we've got these enhanced capabilities. And, I'll definitely pick you up and say, hey, what do you see? So, matter of fact, I've got good news this week since we're talking personal. I really had a tough time getting our show together this week because of, A, I had to pay Uncle Sam a whole lot of moolah.
Right.
I got that out of the way, but then I had my... As I've said in the past, I'm actually a coronary patient myself, and I've been hospitalized 3 times for problems with my heart, and it's a timing thing. It's like having a bad distributor, you know. Anyway, I went in and got my yearly treadmill and passed with flying colors. I was expecting to have to go back to do my thing there, but the good news is I'm also something I'm just going to recommend to folks who have high cholesterol. Turns out that, for me, I am not good with statin drugs. And I found out that niacin, of all things, is a great, basically a nutrient, but it also is a drug for reducing cholesterol. And it seems to be working real well with me. They've got me on it, and I'm on 500 milligrams a day, and it's just knocking the cholesterol down. So I'm starting to feel a little better. I got a little more energy. So that was good news, and I'm feeling great about things. So I'm raring to go. I've got the calendar going for both the group and the show, and we got a reveal coming up from our investigation from March 21st,
right,
at a private residence in Pilot Hill, and we got some pretty good evidence out of that, and some Class A EVPs, and we've got the poor people are itching to get us out there, and I couldn't do it this weekend, but we're going to go out there and do basically a TAP style reveal, the
good.
Full video and everything. So we're going to put that on a video, and then we'll load that up on the GRI site, and we'll just kind of point everybody to that if you want to see it and go forward. And also, do you remember that when you were here, that cafe that we ate at over in just next to Carey House? I talked to the owner today, and at first he was kind of standoffish, and then I was having lunch there. And he got talking to me, and he started telling me about all the stuff that was going on. And guess what? I got a phone number and a name for the hangman's tree across the street. And so we're going to be calling them to see if we can't go in there and stay overnight, but what we can do is probably put dropper quarters in. So I think we're going to be able to go in there and investigate that. Just with a passive type investigation and see what we get for some video and some audio. And the second floor is so dangerous to go up, we'll never be able to get up there. So they're going to basically gut the whole building, and they're trying to sell it now, and there's really nobody buying it. So I think we'll have probably not too hard a time talking our way in there. And then not only that, it turns out that the owner started telling me that a lot of the buildings on that side of the street where Carey House is on up, including his cafe, they've noticed strange things, lights turning themselves on and off, the works. So I took a lot of notes, and so we have some potential future cases down the road there. And for those of you who don't know where we're talking about, it's the town of Placerville. It's about 12 miles from where gold was discovered in the state of California. And believe me, a lot happened there. And there were a lot of hangings, a lot of violence, shootings. You name it, it happened in Placerville. It was called Old Hangtown for a reason. So anyway, it was a really good good day out. Got a lot done, and Oddly enough, I picked up the rototiller. We're going to go out and be planting our garden this year and get that all done. So we're going to be growing lots of stuff, and I'm sure the local spirits who like to come in, cling and clang is what you call them. I think I'm going to take the EVP out after I get them plowing.
Well, that's Wayne and James.
Yeah, Wayne and Jane. I took the ovulus out and was testing it, and they were saying all kinds of stuff. I guess they were trying to figure it out. I put it in the there's two modes, like dictionary mode. Then there's the kind of a I'm trying to phenome mode, and then there's a mixed mode that you can go with. And I'm still figuring this all out, but they were saying stuff and almost kind of threatening, which is the usual for them. So I'm not scared of them any time soon. I'm sure they'll be dropping by the show when I open it up. So I don't know. Anyway, let's see. Let's look. And we're looking at our 825 has rolled up on us with all this talk, huh? So what
that's
we'll do
right.
Is so I am going to, just a moment, if you make some really cute noises right now, I'm going to look because I have the wrong glasses on and I have to find the darn song. Here we go.
Hey, this isn't circus music.
I just want a fighter jet so I can kill something. This is Blue Leader.
we need to do EVPs at 2,000 miles an hour.
Copy that.
Roger, we'll do a strike mission. We'll go in and collect all that. We'll also be firing some EMFs out to see if we can attract some ghost chases. You got that?
Copy that.
Roger that. Okay, hey, we're back. And
did you see the song that I typed on in the chat room?
Oh, no. Let me just a sec. Let me take a look.
It says, it goes, I do, 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 do. I do what I do. You know that it's true. So please, 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 please let me do, oh, what I do.
Oh. Yeah, I love it, but don't quit your day job, okay? That's good.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to have fun.
Oh, you are having fun. Oh,
I know I can't sing.
No.
Whatever.
That's what was happening. Oh, yes. And Carla is not here this weekend, so she'll be listening.
Poor Carla
here.
Broke her foot.
Oh, goodness gracious me. That's what happened to her. Yeah, so yeah, she needs to strap the pins to her feet.
Oh, Carla, strap the pins to your feet. Oh, my God.
Yep, and she was a great interview, and she's going to be coming back and talking some more with us in the near future. So we just wanted to say thanks to her for last week for being with us. And I think we're going to go ahead and go on and talk about some of the ships that we have on tonight. We've got the USS I can't even say it tonight. Can you say that? Tarawa? I'll say Tarawa.
Tarawa.
Yeah, Tarawa, and that's also LHA-1. So before we have, I think Doc John's going to call in, and I'm waiting. Ah, I see him out there, so I'll put him on. But Doc, just take a note that I'll be, oops, wrong mouse. Would help if I had the right mouse here. I'll read off a history of the ship, and then I'll go ahead and have him talk about his story. So we're going to do that. Add him in. If it will just answer. Come on. I love the Blog Talk. Why we're trying to get that to go. Come on. Okay, I see that we got him on there. So, Doc, just wait a second. We'll kind of introduce the ship you are on. And
okay.
What this is called the Tarawa. LHA-1 was built by the Ingalls Shipbuilding Division of Litton Industries at Pascalugan, Mississippi, and was commissioned on May 29th, 1976. Tarawa was the first in a new generation of multi-purpose amphibious assault ships, a vital member of the Navy Marine Corps team in the Pacific Fleet, and a major factor in U.S. power projection overseas. And I'll just read the next paragraph, and then we'll go ahead and get on into what the paranormal part of this. So, Tarawa's first deployment on the to the Western Pacific began in March 1979. In addition to an embarked helicopter squadron, the ship operated with temporarily assigned AVAA Harrier jets in a successful experiment to determine the feasibility of operating vertical short takeoff and landing aircraft, they call them VSTOL, from an amphibious assault ship. During this deployment, Tarawa rescued 400 Vietnamese refugees who were adrift in the South China Sea, and upon returning, Tarawa won her first Admiral James H. Flatley Memorial Award for Aviation Air Safety. And so this goes on and on with a whole bunch of stuff, but it's a great ship, and it looks a little bit like an aircraft carrier, but not quite. The big flat deck on top and a beautiful vessel. So with that said, we've got someone here, actually, Sir Robert Bird. And could tell us a whole bunch. Can't talk today. So we've got Doc John here. Hello,
hey,
Doc. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
I wish I had a bell. Yeah, I would love to ring a bell. So, Kat, can you do a bell noise?
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, we got an honored guest here.
Oh, that's a sub.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, that's a sub.
So John, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I joined the Navy to get away from a steel mill town in Pennsylvania, and that I did, and it gave me a job for the rest of my life, which is wonderful. but and I recommend it to any of the listeners very highly. The military is a great place to go if you're in a place where school wasn't for me. So the Navy was the best thing for me to do. And I grew up in a small town. I grew up in a very paranormally active house where I saw spirits on a regular basis. And I went through all of the, you know, it was like every type of haunting imaginable I went through. I heard the voices. I heard, disembodied hands pulling at my ankles in bed, the bed shaking. I had poltergeist activity.
Wow!
I saw spirits in the form of smoke, and I saw spirits that were just as solid as you and I. And this went on well into my 20s at home. I'd see them even when I came back on leave from the Navy. But to get onto the Tarawa, I kept trying to get, as the Navy says, haze gray and underway. That was where I wanted to be. I was stationed with the Marines first, and then I got aboard a Marine aircraft carrier, and it was wonderful. Not only is that a flat top, it's also a flat bottom, and she's designed to sink herself in the aft portion and release boats going off, which is really fascinating to do in the middle of the ocean. You know,
wow.
To have this boat lower the aft wall basically and fill what they call the well deck, and boats would then float up and then they take off so the Marines could go out wherever. And it was phenomenal. I was aboard
sure
when
the
we
Navy
had Harriers.
SEALs were. Oh, pardon
What's
me.
That?
I'm sorry. I'm sure
Go
the
ahead.
Navy SEALs deployed off of there quite a bit too.
I can't talk about that, but yeah, we did have.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
I'll take that as a yes. Okay.
I don't want suited people knocking at my door.
Let's just say you had your own collection of special black fish that you inform. Okay, we got that.
That's right.
Okay.
But she was a wonderful ship to sail aboard. She didn't handle well in hurricanes. We went through three of them.
Wow.
And we were big. We had the LSTs and the smaller craft. And we were all flat bottomed. And you'd see these smaller ships, we'd catch a 40-foot wave, and these smaller ships would submerge, and then they'd pop up. So the guys on board were just, we were getting casualties on a regular basis from these smaller ships. And
so there were casualties, you mean people died out there as well as got hurt badly?
Sure, sure.
Wow.
Whether it's peacetime or wartime, unfortunately, people get hurt and get killed. But we had a 300-bed hospital aboard with six stationary surgery rooms. And we were known as not only LHA Landing Helicopter Assault, but largest hospital afloat as well. And
yeah,
it was a phenomenal place to work. It really was.
What
it taught
did you...
me a lot.
What did you actually do in your duty there
on
board the ship?
I was a corpsman. I was medical.
You were a corpsman, a medical corpsman. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, I was a medical corpsman, and my job was sick call, and then I would stand duty on the ward when we had patients, and we would do a lot of elective surgeries because we'd pick up a surgical team in San Diego. And surgical team being doctors, nurses, surgeons, and they had to do something to occupy their time. So if we weren't in an actual war setting, we would have people come aboard that needed everything from, circumcisions to major surgeries where they needed shoulders repaired or knees repaired or, you know, anything along those lines. I remember when, I can say bastard on the radio, can I?
Sure you can. He'll...
I remember one poor
Go
bastard.
For it.
He had a circumcision done, and he was working out while we were at sea. He was a Marine. He was working out while at sea, and the barbell shifted, and he popped both arms out of socket. So
ow.
He comes down. He comes down. We do surgery on him and put his arms back in. He's all bandaged up. He's got a circumcision. He can't use his arms. He decides to go out in town overseas, gets drunk, gets jumped, and is kicked in the groin. So he comes in.
Ow.
Oh,
man, this guy's
got
a bad week.
Massive blood and bruises. And it's like, you'd better stay on board from now on.
Man, he needed his horoscope cast and just follow it. Oh,
no.
Poor guy. Oh, God. Yeah, when guys hear about that, we all go, oh, we grab, like, oh, no, that's just not right. So
yeah.
he had a bad time of it. Well, and I'm sure you when you did deployments out, too, you probably were, you know, sent to disaster areas and that kind of thing, too. You probably
be
in the largest ship, you know, hospital around. I'll bet they made a good use of that.
Oh, they certainly did. We did a lot of goodwill missions. And, you know, unfortunately, they never made the news. It's
That's
just
kind
of
the way it
things.
Works. With, yeah. Where were some of the places that bring good memories?
Indonesia. We went to Indonesia during a drought, and we dropped off huge, huge amounts of rice, powdered milk, medical supplies. Took on serious casualties that way. Africa, we went to Africa and did the same thing. Some wonderful things that we did. And unfortunately, the John Q. Public still think in terms of Vietnam. I know when I first went into the military, and I first flew home, I had to travel in uniform, and I would have people in the airport spitting on me. And it was like,
yeah.
I'm a corpsman. I mean, you know, people would come up and say, why do you want to kill other people? It's my job to save them. I'm not the one out there killing them. I'm the one trying to do my best to save them. But,
as a matter of
you
fact,
know, we
yeah,
have
a matter
a,
of fact, I'll take a moment and just say that, I mean, our family, I come from an Army family and, you know, I've been in the defense industry my whole life around these people and that kind of thing, but we always make a point, no matter what the political climate is like, if we see a man or woman in uniform, we go up and we thank them for their service. And, I really ask the audience, you've got to understand what these folks go through to protect our freedoms and the kinds of things they're doing. Are just amazing. So if you see someone in uniform, you know, they're there for you, and they're facing things that, you believe me, you don't want to face. So they need to have a hat, tip of the hat and a hand out and say, thank you, soldier. So
unfortunately, now the climate has changed to where people are more apt to thank someone in uniform. But, you know, there's a lot of liberals out there who don't want a military at all, and they don't realize what the military does, and they still think we're all baby killers, you know. And it's a shame, because the military is definitely needed, and we're not like until we get into a war, and then once we start fighting, then we're not liked for fighting. And it's like, we're protecting freedom here. A lot of people think Iraq is a horrible travesty. You know, whatever your political views are on Iraq, we went there first and foremost to try and stop terrorists from coming into our country. And the same with Afghanistan. And I feel sorry for those guys and gals that are there, because that's got to be the absolute worst place to be. I was trained in jungle. A jungle is hot and humid, but Those guys are fighting in 130-degree heat.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
just,
it's unfathomable. Yeah, it's actually, it seems to be harder on the equipment from the stories I've heard, and I've talked with Special Forces folks and things, and you know, they've been rotated through there, and they just say, man, you don't want to be there. And I believe them. So,
wonderful things that have happened there have never made the news. The friends that we've made, I was trained, and it's a tradition for military medical. When you go into a country, you're there as an emissary, so you do the best you can for whomever. Whether it be enemy combatant, or whether it be civilian, or whether it be your own men, but you know, your job is to patch people up and to do the absolute best, give the absolute best care that you can. And the wonderful stories out of Iraq never make it back here because the political climate wants to say Iraq is bad, you know, it's horrible, and let's do everything we can to make it look like a bad war. And
actually, I think a lot of our a lot of the American people are much more perceptive than the media gives them credit for.
Yeah,
and we know what you did.
No,
believe me, it's well known amongst a lot of people who really think things through and look at what's happened. It's the middle of the country, and I'm not the kind to walk in and tell somebody that, you know, their beliefs are all screwed up because they say one thing or another. You know, I come from a family, you know, similar to yours with a military background, so I see, and I work in a facility that makes propulsion systems. So we got a big target painted right on top of us. I work with the end of a gun myself there, and so I know what this all really means. But I think you're right. I think that bad news travels more quickly and is much more interesting to sell than good news.
Yeah.
But, you know, the one thing I kind of point out to people when they talk about, you know, they listen to the news and they're all worked up, and I go, do you realize that, like, 99% of humanity right now is getting up, going to work, getting along with their neighbors, and doing all this great stuff because they've got each country has their military protecting them, and that for the most part, people are getting along for the most part, and it's just these few rabble rousers that are screwing it all up for the rest of us,
which is always the case. And like my dad said, my dad used to say, "The squeaky wheel gets the grease," and that's true. So those few rabble rousers are the ones who get the news.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to make kind of a promise here, actually, not kind of, we're going to just make the promise here that on this show, we tip our hats to the military every time, no matter how bad the political climate is.
Well,
so, you know, again,
yeah,
thank you for your service, and, you know, God bless you, my friend.
Thank you.
Let's talk about your experience that you had, or I guess one or more experiences that you had aboard the ship, and
the major experience I had was I was standing, being a hospital corpsman, we would stand watches even at sea, and so I was up at O'Dark 30 about 3:30 in the morning, and I was sleeping. But I was standing my watch in case anyone came in who was sick or injured or however while we're at sea. And the door flew open, which woke me up. And a sailor walks in, and he's wearing dungarees, which are blue jeans, a T-shirt, and socks. He's got dark hair, he's clean-shaven, kind of disheveled hair. So, okay, it's just another patient coming in. And I said, "Can I help you?" And he makes a turn towards the right, and he starts walking, and then he disappears.
Now he just winked out in front of you?
Yeah, this guy was solid as you or I. And I could see him from head to toe, and he never said a word. He just walked in. And the funny thing is, of all things, this was a residual haunt. Because the next morning, you know, I went over to where the guy had been to make sure that I had seen what I saw, and there's nobody there.
Yeah.
Now, I know I saw the door swing open. I know I saw him walk in, and then he's gone. He just faded out. And the next morning, I talked to some corpsmen who had been there longer, because this was relatively when I first reported aboard. And one of the first classes, who's, you know, the higher rank than I, said, asked me what he looked like, and I told him. And he said, you know, about 2 years ago, a guy came down to medical, and he was complaining because he was depressed. And I told him everything would be okay. Don't worry about it. You know, things have a way of working themselves out, and, you know, et cetera. And one long weekend, while they were in port, he went up to a space which was not used generally and hung himself.
Oh, man.
And he was there for 3 days before they found him. And he was wearing a T-shirt, dungarees, and socks. And he's about 5'6", slight build.
Yeah.
And he wasn't surprised when I told him what I had seen, because apparently he had been seen before. But it was so odd. It was, you know, you always think of a residual haunt as being, you know, like EVPs or some sort of a ghostly spirit. But this guy
yeah.
was solid. And it was just... it was amazing. And, you know, of all times, not to have a camera. But, and I often wonder, too, if I had taken a picture of him, what he would have looked like on film. Whether
I've wondered that, too, with the, you know, these solid apparitions. I've wondered, can you get that? And because I don't remember seeing any, quote, you know, solid photos of ghosts. It's usually the vaporous thing or
yeah.
orbs.
Yeah,
you know, but
yeah.
So did he actually acknowledge you, or he just acted like you weren't even there?
He just acted like I wasn't there.
Huh.
When I called out, he stopped, which I suppose was an acknowledgement, but then he just went on about his business and disappeared. And the funny thing was, this sounds really cruel, but the ward was lined with coffins. Now, you wouldn't know these were coffins because they were all stainless steel.
Uh-huh.
Now, whether he was buried in one of those, I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of his suicide or what was done with the body afterwards. But he certainly impressed himself upon the ship. And after this happened, I used to have to stand watches with what was called the ready lifeboat. And the ready lifeboat was just in case a pilot went down and a drink, we would go out and rescue him. And
yeah.
at night, when you're walking along, I always thought at sea that it would be so bright because of the moon and stars. You can't see your hand in front of your face.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I would be walking. Now, as a kid, I was petrified of the dark. And this forced me not to panic. But knowing that there were ghosts aboard, it was a really interesting experience having to find my way along the railing to get back to a hatch. And since we were running silent, which means no lights, there's nothing to guide on. So it's just pitch black, and all you hear is the rush of the ocean going by.
So you were virtually blind, feeling your way across there. If you fell off, nobody would ever have known where you fell off.
Right, exactly.
Oh, my good Lord.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were other things that happened aboard that you may have heard about. You kind of alluded to some of that.
Well,
what other things were you aware of out there on that ship?
I know that the morgue was active. We did have a morgue on board, and it was active. But as far as all that goes, he's the only real ghost I ever saw. Now, you were talking about the Lady Lex, the USS Lexington. She was very haunted. And when I first joined, she was active. Well, she was active as a reserve ship. So they would take reservists out to learn how to sail. And one of the rescues I did aboard, I was stationed at a hospital in Philly, and she was in Philly Naval Yard. And one of the rescues I did was a young sailor snuck down into the paint room, and the paint room has signs everywhere, no flame. And he decided to catch the smoke. Well, it completely emoliated him. And the one sailor who tried to rescue him almost died from fire as well. So once we put him out, we brought him in, and that paint room thereafter was extremely active. So if anyone ever gets the chance to go on the Lex, go to the paint room.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're coming up on our second break, and I'd like to talk more about that with Lex and move on into that if you don't mind staying on for a little while.
Well, I can't stay on too long because of the phone charges, so.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, why don't we hang it up here then, and we'll just, we'll have you on another time.
Yeah.
And, but we'll go ahead and talk more about the Lexington and also the USS Hornet. And we do thank you for your time there, John.
You're welcome.
Yeah. We thank you so much, Doc. I really appreciate you being on the show tonight. God bless you.
Thank you, Kat.
Yeah.
God bless you, too.
Thanks.
All right.
Okay, and if you do get the chance, we would like to talk more about your house that you grew up in.
Yeah.
So, okay. Well, we'll get in contact with you and talk some more about that. Maybe set something up. We could do a recorded interview to save you some money on the charges. And I'll play that back. So
that
we'll get back with you about that. And we thank you for being on.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. And we're going to go ahead and take a about a five-minute break.
He is just hella interesting.
This guy is super cool. And
I love talking to service people. I was at SeaTac about 5 o'clock in the morning going – actually flying to New York, and some servicemen started coming at me, and I dropped everything I had, and I just started to applaud very loudly, and people were looking at me funny, and I pointed down the hallway, and I was the first one to see him, and all of a sudden, this thunderous applause was awesome.
Yep. I had an experience at Sac Metro where a young soldier was standing in front of me, and people were kind of ignoring him, and I walked by him, and I was waiting for my sister arrived from Colorado, and I suddenly I said, "Hey, soldier," and he turned around and he looked like he was about ready to fight me, and I said, "Thank you for your service, son," and put my hand out and I clapped him on the back, and he looked at me and he says, "That's the first time anybody's ever done that," and I said, "Well, there'll be more of that. You just realize how many people really appreciate what you're doing," and guy almost cried. So it was real nice to make him feel better about it all. But that said, let's go ahead and take our break, and we'll be back in 5 minutes, and then we'll continue on with a couple more ships and talk about the haunted Navy some more.
Go pee.
And, okay, that too. See you later.
All right.
feel like an American when I hear that. Just get you right here.
It does. That and John Philip Sousa, man.
Well, and I want to take a moment, too, and thank the those mysterious United States Navy SEALs for some recent accurate shooting that occurred in the Indian Ocean, I believe it was, just off the coast of Somalia.
Oh, they shot the crap out of those damn pirates, and they deserved it, too.
And basically, I'm going to say, well done, boys. You kicked their asses.
And woo!
Yep. So that's for the for doing a good job and pulling that captain, who did one hell of a job. And yeah, one hell of a job, Pilgrim. So he's back home on U.S. soil, and a clear message is sent to Somalia: don't screw with us. So anyway, I just wanted to get that moment in, and it made me feel good to be an American when that all went down. I'm sure you did. Felt good too.
Well, anytime you can spray good old American lead. You know how I feel about that.
Well, hey, let's go ahead and move into, since we're on Navy history and all that, and the great ships that are out there, let's talk about the USS Lexington, or as he, as our Doc John talked about, the Lex. Actually, sounds like that space show, the Lex.
Well, you know who's in the Lex. In the chat room, right? Sal's in there from Shanley.
Oh, Sal's there? Sal!
Our friend Sal, it's www.shanleyhotel.com in Napanock, New York.
And guess what? I was just going to basically tell you before we got going on that, or before the show ended, that I was definitely going to be able to do this thing in July.
Well, now,
Sal's
saying that they are booking up real fast for the summer, so we're going to have to move on it.
Yeah, I think I'll jump on it. So we'll definitely get some reservations in. But we are going out there, and we'll do a live broadcast from the Shanley if Sal's up for that. So, so Sal, hey, thank you very much for being on the show that last time, and we'd love to have you on again. So we just wanted you to know, it was just a great time with you. And let's talk about the Blue Ghost of the Lexington, Miss Cat.
That is an interesting and fascinating story.
Yeah, here we go. She stands tall and proud on the shoreline of Corpus Christi's North Beach, now a floating museum, but a battle-seasoned war machine, proud of her memorable service to the United States Naval Fleet. And like most battle-hardened ships, she has many stories to tell. But this World War II relic comes with a twist. A white-uniformed, blue-eyed young seaman who has been known to tell tales of the ship to museum visitors who have come to tour her. The only catch is that this tour guide is a ghost. And staff of the floating museum call him Charlie, and visitors often have called him Helpful. But whatever you call him, this neatly dressed sailor in white is not part of the museum staff, but reportedly a former crew member that simply failed to depart the ship after giving up his life after a Japanese kamikaze attack on Halloween of 1944 off the coast of the Philippines.
Uh-huh.
And so as many of the as 200 visitors to the museum have reported encounters with Charlie, and without exception, the reports indicate that the ghostly seaman is a very polite young man that knows a great deal of information about the ship, and mainly the Lexington's engine room, which is far below deck. So he's obviously he just knows that he's on the other side, but he really wants to represent the Navy well, which is really pretty cool. So let me look here. He's not the only ghost seen on the ship. One married couple reported seeing a dark-haired man wearing dungarees and a denim work shirt jump to the deck below. There was no one there when the couple ran down to see if the man was injured, and this was not Charlie, who has light hair. Two museum staffers reported walking out of their offices and seeing a man in Japanese pilot's uniform and a U.S. sailor in the hallway, and the two disappeared as the staffers moved closer. And the museum's communications director, Donna Strong, says she doesn't like to talk about ghosts on the ships out of respect for those who served on the aircraft carrier and their families. And so she refers to the most recent occurrences as, quote, sightings. I don't know that that's quite it, but evidently quite a storied ship. And let me see if I can find any more about the Lexington.
thought I had my other page on it up there. But obviously there are many, many, just like the USS Hornet, there are many, many ghosts aboard there. And a polite young man. I wish that more of these guys would come up from the other side to do tour duties. It'd be pretty cool.
Now, there's quite a few sightings out there at the Pearl Harbor Memorial, too, right over the Arizona. I've been out there personally, and you almost feel like you're surrounded by the nice folks that lost their lives on my birthday, which is December 7th. And actually, the story behind the Arizona is they were... they had a band contest, and the winner won the right to sleep in that morning. And the night before, they had this contest, and so they lost many lives. And there are quite a few stories. In fact, there's a couple of stories out at the – there's a land and sea tour, and there's actually a museum out there with a bunch of artifacts from the ships that went down in the Battle of Pearl Harbor. And – there's a couple of reputed people that work there that can recall sighting men in uniform in the museum itself, but of course they disappear.
Yeah, that seems to be a common theme with these ships. I'm looking right now at a website called moonslipper.com, www.moonslipper.com/USS-Lexington-ghost.html. And here they have a picture from the what appears to be one of the machinery rooms of an actual apparition. And you can see this, what looks like a figure of a man in some kind of dungarees or something, maybe a workman's uniform, who would work in there. And that's what we see, you know, we see and hear a lot about when we go on these ships. You know, I mean, as you well know, I spent Halloween aboard the USS Hornet.
Right.
And that was an experience. As a matter of fact, we slept in sick bay, which you know, Doc John would know quite a bit about. I mean, these are big, very expansive rooms. Cots lined one up, one after the other. I think we had two per space, if you will, and lots and lots of space to move, you know, people in and around. So it's actually kind of a luxurious place in terms of space. And it was very interesting because we were told by the docents aboard the ship that there was going to be a lot of things that we would experience that I thought, yeah, right. And later on, it proved to be true. We would hear walking noises, go out and look in the hall, and there would be nobody there. And you would hear running. You'd hear whispering. We had, in one case, we were a whole bunch of us, about 15 investigators had just moved back into sick bay. We were moving all over the ship, and we were hearing someone whistling. And they would whistle in one section of the sick bay where there was a bulkhead door, and then there was an interconnecting hallway that would go across the whole beam of the ship and to the other side of the sick bay. And it would be like you'd hear it whistle one side, and then he'd whistle in the next second the other. And you were going, how in the heck is that happening? And we caught this on tape, and I had my digital recorders. I did not upload any EVPs for the show, but I have a show link on the GRI site, you know, to where we'll put some of this, and we've already got that placed. So there was all this whistling going on, and it was just striking. We had all sorts of things. I was growled at, of all things. Me and the lead docent were talking in one of the surgery rooms of Hornet, and we were growled at. And literally, it put, you know, my hair just went up on end, and I jumped because it was right behind me. And the docent, I looked at her and said, "You ever heard that before?" And she said, "No." And it was something else. And we did leave recorders in overnight and got some amazing stuff, including at about a little bit before 4 in the morning, we got a voice screaming at us to get out. And it was just screaming. And we, you know, there were 40 or 50 people sleeping in this sick bay who would have all woken up to hear that, and we didn't hear it. But on tape, we did. So there was a lot of interesting things that happened aboard there.
One of the interesting, I think a personal experience I had, I had a Sony HD camera, which is a hard disk, 60 gigabyte hard drive aboard, and infrared capabilities, and was and when we first started the tour that evening of Hornet,
mm-hmm.
I actually got turned around, and I ended up in a section of the ship that I shouldn't have been in, and I realized my mistake and had turned around to get back to where I was supposed to be because they wanted us to stay in the sick bay area and to have somebody with us at all times to guide us through,
uh-huh.
and that's for safety reasons. So I realized my mistake and turned around, and I was recording, and I turned around to go back, and I heard a big bang right behind me. And it was in the ship's museum area just aft of sick bay. So I turned around, and actually it's on the GRI site. There's a video of this. You could play the whole thing. And I went back, and I thought, no way. And I went to turn away, and bang, it happened again.
Huh.
You know, and there, and so right in front of me, and there was basically what it appeared to be in front of me, this big giant hatchway type of device, which I found out later was a bomb elevator. And what that did is the bomb elevator was used to bring up munitions from the bottom decks up to the top of the carrier, and that's how they outfitted the planes and did everything they did. Well,
uh-huh.
evidently the Hornet was under attack. It was one of the most highly decorated ships in the Navy. I think it's the eighth ship named Hornet in the U.S. Navy. And that basically that attack, there was a sailor who decided that he was going to run, instead of running up the gangplanks like he was supposed to and going up, you know, decks the normal way, he was going to ride the bomb elevator up. And for whatever reason, either the ship took some sort of a hit or was something happened to shift the bomb load, but the bottom, you know, bottom line of it all was one of the bombs fell off the rack and crushed this guy to death. I mean, these are big bombs, so, you know, there was no way he could get it off of him, and it literally just pulverized him. And where that happened, where he died and the bomb elevator stopped because it jammed everything, was right there at that spot where I had gotten this set of events. And it turned out that I'm not the first to have the experience with this guy in there. He's evidently got a sense of humor. Again, like many of these other stories, feels compelled to stay aboard ship, seems to know that he's dead, and takes great joy in teasing people. And so he hangs around there and is pretty well known to the crew, and they actually took us to where we could find out more about him. They actually know who he is. So if you're ever aboard the Hornet, I believe the man's name is Keith. He was the lead docent, and he was the guy that worked with Taps on the Hornet episode that they had that latter part of last year. Just before I went on my tour of it, they played that. So, but a great episode, and those folks really know their stuff, and just bring it up and ask them about it, and they'll tell you more about that. But an amazing, amazing ship.
I'd love to do the Hornet one of these days.
Yeah, if you live close to a coastal city, or you get the chance to go to a coastal city, look up and find some of these, you know, museums that are out there. There's one called just in San Francisco that's not far from Alameda where the Hornet is, but the downtown Frisco, there's a World War II submarine called the USS Pampanito, and I've been aboard that and was amazed at how well they kept the technology and the smell of diesel in there and that kind of thing. I'm thinking we're probably going to, if we do get a chance to get the group together and go out, we may hit that and do some EVP work in there. The trouble is those kinds of museums tend to, if they're smaller like those subs were, they tend to be playing a lot of pre-recorded sounds and things like that for the visitors, and there's just a lot of noise pollution in there. And I had the same experience recently when I was, early March, we went down to Queen Mary. And I was rather in disbelief when I looked out to see a 70s-era Soviet diesel submarine parked next to the USS Queen, or the Queen Mary. And it turned out it was, I can't remember the name of the name of the vehicle, just trying to remember, and I think it's Scorpion or something like that. anyway, the Russian word for scorpion. This was one of the largest, I think it was a Foxtrot class diesel submarine. And we went aboard it, and I tried to do some EVP work on it, and it was just, I'm still working through it because I think we got some stuff, and I think I got Russian phrases being talked about, but I haven't, I'm just not sure, and I have to find somebody who knows some Russian. I'm not going to know it, you know, but the bottom line is, if you live near one of these floating museums, get there, go see it. You know, these are treasures, and there are a lot of people that work a lot of hard hours to, you know, to keep these things going. And we were told by the Hornet crew who were taking care of her that they felt the presence of these other spirits working with them. And it seems like it's a partnership. And when Hornet was about to be scrapped, there was basically a very highly placed person in the Navy who sort of disobeyed orders and stole her. Actually,
what?
Stole her. I'm not kidding you. Somebody stole an aircraft carrier, and it was a Navy guy himself. He basically violated orders and did not allow the Navy to destroy this. You know, he felt strongly enough about it. He sacrificed his career to save the Hornet. And the way we were kind of talked to about it was that no one had the heart to, quote, you know, Shanghai this guy out of the military, but he was – it scarred his career. But – at the same time, what everybody realized what he had done, and that he had done something really fabulous and brought something to, you know, the Bay Area that really was needed. And not only that, saved an amazing, you know, piece of U.S. history. You know, because the Hornet spent a long time, you know, after its service in World War II, doing all sorts of things, including recovering the Apollo 11 crew and I think several other Apollo crews. So when we all saw them land, they had that trailer facility where they were worried about the moon germs and things like that.
Uh-huh.
And they brought them aboard and actually had them staying in there and basically loaded that thing up and put it on a loaded them up and actually flew them off. I believe flew them off the carrier or somehow got them off the carrier, and I saw a picture of them actually loading them with these guys inside from who just went to the moon and flew them in a C-130 all the way back to Johnson Space Center. So there was just amazing things that happened aboard the Hornet, and the number of engagements she had was just stunning. If I can find...
You know, when the Mighty Mo was here in Bremerton... Now the Mull is had been you know decommissioned, and she's seen a lot of theaters, a lot of action. The Mull, the Mighty Mull, very proud to have her here.
Oh, she's still there?
No, she belonged at Pearl. We sent her to Pearl. She the Mull belongs at Pearl, and she is now.
She's...
Oh yeah, she went to. She went to Hawaii when Bill Clinton was president.
Well, be darned.
Well, oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Excuse me.
People wanted to keep her here, and we were like, what? No, she belongs at Pearl. She belongs tied up next to the Arizona. That's where she belongs. She doesn't belong here, sitting around, doing what? You know?
It's funny. I feel bad because I kind of think it was in a great place. Number one, because I could actually afford more easily to go see it in Washington State. But
the Mo.
Yeah, I'd love to go see the Mo.
My great uncle was on her deck, standing in front of General Ito when he surrendered. And he has famous story about everything was on the up and up, you know, and they were all standing there all dressed up in their duty dues, and then Ito signed the surrender, and McCarthy leaned in and said, "Payback's a bitch, ain't it?" And they all laughed at him after he signed it.
I don't feel so bad about it because, you know, we had one of my great uncles was, I believe, aboard the, I can't remember the name of the ship, but I want to say the Arizona, and was basically, he took a bullet straight to the head in some sort of strafing thing, the action that was going on before that ship was lost. So I may be wrong. I'm going to have to check my family history on this, but definitely killed at Pearl Harbor. And for a lot of years, my family was had a real bad thing about the Japanese folks. And we had actually a Japanese woman marry into the family, and it was just, there was a big family council about it all. And turned out her name was Jane, and she just turned out to be a sweetheart. And, you know, so it took some barrier breaking down to go on here. But, you know, what they did when they attacked us, you know, 2,500 U.S. servicemen killed, you know, on that fateful day. And then, you know, for all the subsequent things that happened, I could see why the U.S. did what it did, you know, with a nuclear weapon. And not only that, it's actually saved a lot of lives because, you know, if they had tried to take the homeland, Japanese homeland, by force with conventional weapons, they would have lost 1 million guys. I mean, that's just, and that was like the estimate. So what they did was just an amazing, amazing thing. Let me see here. I'm looking at some stats for the USS Hornet. CV-12, she was originally going to be called the Kearsage. And instead, after the loss of the prior Hornet, CV-8, lost in October 1942, she became the eighth ship to bear the name, which, so I was right about that. And commissioned in 43, and after 3 months of training, joined the U.S. forces in the Pacific War. Played a major part in Pacific battles of World War II, and also took part in Operation Magic Carpet, returning troops back to the U.S. following World War II. And she served in the Vietnam War, and as I noted earlier, played a part in the Apollo program, recovering astronauts when they returned from the moon. And Hornet decommissioned in 1970 and was designated a National Historic Landmark and opened to the public as a at the Naval Air Station in Alameda, California. And definitely worth your time if you get a chance to go visit that ship. You'll feel it when you get aboard. And
well, we apparently have an aircraft carrier here. Trying to figure out the name of it. Yeah, I'll just go see if... I live in Seattle, and we have the Museum of Flight, and the Enola Gay is here.
Oh, okay.
And I have heard, because I know people that have worked down there at the Museum of Flight, that at night, they really don't like being there because they can hear people talking. And there's there's a Tomcat down there. The one of the Concords is down there. But the Enola Gay, last time I knew of, she is here in Seattle at the Museum of Flight. And for those of you that don't know, the Enola Gay is the plane that dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And so I can probably get an investigation there if you ever want to check it out. Let me know.
I'd like to do that. I mean, that would be an amazing place. I mean, I've seen some of the investigations, although I don't like most haunted. I think they're kind of screwy. But
is that the English show where they run around and scream all the time?
Yeah, they all scream, but they've done some. They occasionally will run into a place where it's truly, really haunted. What they get into, and they get some real evidence, despite their crazy methods. But and I'm just saying that's my opinion only, so I don't get sued out of my socks here. But you know, bottom line is they have hit quite a few of the World War II era airfields.
And
you get the same kind of thing. A lot of talking in those old hangars and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sure there's U.S. equivalents out there. And,
didn't Taps do Wright-Patterson Air Force Base?
Yeah, Taps did Wright-Pat, and it was just, whoa. And not only that, they had there was actually a private home that was already haunted when they put the place in, and then it got even more haunted, I guess, when because whatever was in there was either didn't like the military being around or, you know, had their own issues with it, but... I'm sitting here trying to get my show my switchboard to come back.
How long of a show are we doing tonight?
Well, we're on the last 4 minutes because I did a I did an abbreviated show this weekend because of trying to get all my taxes done and all that stuff. I got stuck there, Catsters. So,
we could talk for hours.
Yeah, I could just go schedule a half hour one right after this and get ready to sign on again. I mean, we could do
hours,
hour.
Man. We've done it. Come on. You know, in fact, I want to know if anybody thinks this would be kind of fun to have a GRI marathon. See how long we can do this show for. Set a record or something.
I like that idea. I think we could do. I could handle 6 hours. I'd have to have food brought in and appropriate bathroom facilities. I mean, that's a big deal, So, I think that would be kind of fun. But what do you think? 6 hours? Are you up for something like
that?
It'd
be fun to fly down there and hang out in the studio and eat pizza.
The show page is back. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you to do the shout outs. Since we're on the last 3 minutes.
We have our shout-outs tonight. We have guest 5337. We have John Daly. Of course, we have Sal from the Shanley Hotel. And
hey,
then
Sal.
Then there's Sal. And we have the K-9 cop, Doc John, Brian Cat. Then there's Disgruntled Dan. And, of course, we have John with GRI Paranormal.
God darn, that guy keeps, every time I go on to I Am Haunted, I keep getting invitations to attend my own show. It's kind of cool.
Those invitations out.
Yeah, you do, and between you and I promoting things, it's going pretty good. So I'm going to go ahead and say thanks for being on, and thank you to
everybody. Wait a second, we have an idea from the chat room. K-9 Cop thinks we should do a 6-hour live show from the Shanley.
Well, I'd like to do something like that if basically the way it would work, we'd have to do there's a limit on the show length since I got a little time left to talk about it here. We've got a limit on the show length of 2 hours per show, so we could do 3 shows back-to-back and then do a live investigation type feed. And
that would work.
Go with that. That would work. I mean, we could probably work something out. It would definitely be a lot of work to do it, but considering that I'm sure we could pre-investigate, make sure we know where all the power outlets and all that stuff is. We could get it all figured out and then have it all instrumented and have us doing our thing, and maybe even have Sal there investigating with us. Who knows? It'd be fun to do that. So
that's
I'm
right.
All up for that. Well, we're in the last 30 seconds, so hey, Kat, we got another one in the bag, and I don't know. Are you up for another 30 minutes if I schedule a show real quick?
I'm up for another 30 minutes. Everybody, stay where you are.
Well, actually, you know what? I just realized we're kind of stuck. We'd have to come back at 10 o'clock because I just don't have the time. So we'll go ahead and come back at 10 o'clock. How about that? 30 minutes?
Okay, everybody, we're coming back at 10 o'clock for another show.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, we're off on not streaming, so I'm going to go ahead and break it here. I'll get going on scheduling that, Miss Cap. And grab a bite to eat and then come back, okay?
Half an hour. I wonder if I can make it to Starbucks and back.
All right. Well, do that real quick, and then we'll just continue on and do a free-form show. You up for that?
Yeah, I'm up for it. I'm hip.
Okay, we'll do I'll schedule it for an hour. What the hell?
Okay.
Okay, let's have fun.
So I'll call you in about 20 minutes.
Okay. See you then. I'll have it set up.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.